right? We're from Cork, and what's happening in Dublin? Nothing. Don't give it. They don't give a shite about it down here.
Focus on the game. Don't hide behind your cars or your tattoos or your girlfriends or your agents. Play the game.
Be careful the cat. No say the cat is in the sack when you have not the cat in the sack.
The great football, the Liam Brady's, the Ronnie Whelan's, the David O'Leary's. This is a great football and country produced players and go out and play that rubbish.
This week I caught up with my former Cork City teammate Carl Shepherd as we talk about his career in the League of Ireland, his brief spell in the UK, his time working under John Caulfield, and also what really happened between him and Dundalk.
Be fair, Shep, your hair's looking tremendous. Best it's ever looked like.
Yeah, it's not looking too bad at the moment.
What's the story? Did you get another transplant or something?
No, nothing. It's just I haven't had anywhere to get a cut.
I was going to say it's probably just from being retired, no, isn't it? No stress.
Yeah, no stress.
No, I have to learn anything to deal with.
Nice.
How are you getting on with retirement? You're missing it at the moment, no, with seeing the clubs and the friendlies.
No, I'm happy it's over. Just, you know yourself, towards the end, my last 2-3 years, I was not enjoying it. Just because of the way the body was, I hated. I started to hate football at that stage where it was becoming a job and, geez, I wasn't liking it. So to... When I see the lads now going in for pre-season, I was thinking, will I be missing it? I suppose I'm just happy I'm not out running and all now. I bought a treadmill because I started getting a bit fat, so I'm trying to do some running.
No way you would get fat anyway. You're the most strictest person ever.
Yeah.
You're still vegan.
Is it half and half? I'm having at this month now, I'm doing a vegan month, so but that's mainly because of my back, where if I don't eat meat, it brings down inflammation in my blood, and also I'm doing that now.
What's the story? Are you still in a lot of pain, and everything?
It just crops up every now and again. This month, and I'm not having a great month because since I retired, as I said, I just started eating a lot of rubbish, and when I done that, then I suppose the inflammation goes up, and I suppose that's why I said, right, I'm going to be a bit stricter now, and I had my fun of eating crap, so. From now till the end, I'll just...
Till the end of what?
At least till the end of lockdown where I can go, right, I've nothing to...
And when's that going to be, Chef? Yeah. Do you know something we don't know?
Who knows? But at least I can say, if it's now till the end of lockdown, then happy days that I can, I suppose, be strict while I suppose there's no real temptation of go out, have a few pints with the lads or anything like that because you can't.
You actually do training by yourself now? Do you actually stay strict in that?
Yes and no. So at the moment, I'm going through a stage of I wanted to get a bit fitter, as in my running-wise. I haven't stopped doing any gym work because I've got a gym in the house, so I've just been ticking along with that. But I got a treadmill in now, and geez, you lose it quick. I was trying to do 30-second sprints and one-minute runs, and geez, I'm a mile off compared to where I was.
Actually, like one retired guy to another, what's the point in setting yourself targets like that? You know, when you're playing, you kind of go, I have to be quick. But surely, if you're just retired, you're just that's just a little taking over. I don't need to be quick anymore.
That's what I found difficult. That, as you said, when we were playing, it was always a case of, okay, you have to do this run and you have to do it in this time. And now you've no one holding the gun to your head saying, get in this time. So. It's tough, and I suppose that everyone who isn't a professional will know that you have to find motivation somewhere to get, I suppose, targets of let's say them runs now. I'm saying, right, by the end of this month, I want to be doing 10 1-minute runs at a speed of 19 kilometers on the treadmill. And I'm going, right, let's tick away at it slowly. I've started off on 6, where I used to do 10 on maybe 20 kilometers an hour, and I'd be flying, whereas now. Jeez, I'm getting fat and I'm getting fat quick.
That's all part of it. Do you know when you retire on an iPhone list, everyone wants to know it yet at the start, but have you found your profile has kind of slipped off after all these? You've had a great career and stuff like that, and football's just moved on. They're like, catch up with who?
Yeah, I think you always find that you'll have a core of people who will sort of always be there throughout your career. And when you go through lulls, that's when I suppose you can always see the people who will drop off straight away as soon as you retire. And I suppose I never really was one to, I suppose I wouldn't tolerate fools too quickly, in a sense that I wouldn't let people who I felt weren't in my, who wouldn't stick by me when I did retire, I wouldn't let them really inside my group, or I suppose that's the best way to put it, that when I did retire, I didn't get this shock of, geez, where's all my friends gone to? That I always just had, I kept a close group that I suppose always stuck by me through football.
Yeah, I saw something, you weren't a proper banter man, were you? In the dressing room?
No, look,
hard to get into that group, like, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose that's why I've always been told that, look, there's no friends in football, but I wouldn't say that's true. I still talk to some of my close friends in football. I call one, some of my best friends, that it'd be just that thing of, as you said, there is the banter side to football that I wasn't too big on buying into, but look, I suppose it's important to be, I suppose, a good teammate now, but buying into the banter and all that side of it, it wasn't for me.
Hey, let's go back to the career. So I want to have a look over it. You get really, you leave Everton for Galway. How is your mindset then? Is it more of a sad to be coming home or just relieved?
No, it was delighted. When I left Everton, I was a shell of a person that I am now, in a sense that I hated football completely, because my time at Everton was, I went over it, 16, 17, and hated almost 95% of my time there. I really did not enjoy living in England, didn't enjoy being away from my family and friends, where I suppose, look, you're sitting in a box room in Diggs with 10 other lads in Everton, is the side that they don't sell to you, that you, I suppose, you're on the phone to your friends, you're texting your friends back home. It was MSN back then, actually. You'd be MSN and your mates, and they'd be all saying, oh yeah,
we're to BlackBerry phone used to be the big thing back then.
And, yeah, so you'd be messaging them, and they'd be saying, like, oh yeah, we're going playing this match, or we're going doing this and that, I suppose. And you'd be going, right, well, I'm sitting in this room here for, I suppose at 16, you're nowhere near physically you're nowhere near developed, but mentally it's, I suppose, an important time in a person's life where they're developing so much. And for me, gone over at that sort of that age group, it's far too young for anyone to go over. And when I was coming back home, while I was only going back to Galway, I knew it was still Ireland, and I could drive in the car. I wouldn't have had to book flights in advance or anything like that, that I could jump in the car and drive home. So I was only too happy to, I suppose, get going with Galway.
Galway in financial trouble at that stage, because they were splashing cash at one point, weren't they?
Yeah.
You obviously made them go bankrupt. Like,
not
you can come home for peanuts. Like,
yeah, at that time I was on very little money. It was just enough to keep me ticking over, really. It was, at the time, there was Nick Leeson and Sean Connor there, and okay, some great stories, but I can't really tell too many of them. Let's say the club certainly wasn't being run, I suppose, too well at that stage. I was, a lot of it was being paid in cash, and it was, it wasn't the best time to be at the club. But in terms of my football, and in terms of even Sean Connor, the manager, I loved every minute of it. It was a good group, and I suppose, look, I came back from Everton having played maybe a handful of reserve games and academy football for a couple of years, that to be thrown into men's football in Ireland was unbelievable. And as I said, I absolutely loved it.
Was it a case of when Shamrock Rovers came, you had to go because of the financial reasons, or because you were just dying to go?
No, look, it was, there was a lot of things around it. Galway stayed up. We stayed up in a playoff, and I was quite attached to them, but at the same time, you would have went a couple of weeks without wages. I know at Galway, when I was there, we deferred wages for a number of weeks to help the club. And when you're on very little money to start off with, I suppose it's a big burden to be living away from home, and I suppose having your mum and dad to drop you up.
Well, what's the meeting like for you then, though, when the first set of wages doesn't come in? Because this happens so often in the league. Like, oh, you got it. What's the first meeting like?
It's an unideal one. I suppose first you get your, I suppose it happens in dribs and drabs normally, where maybe you're a day late, the next thing it becomes 2 days late, the following week, and the next thing it's a week late, and then I suppose it goes on, and then you get called in, and it's, glad it's basically, you can defer your wages and keep playing for the club, or the club's going to be gone. So I suppose they kind of force your hand there in that sense. It's either that or you can leave. But when they're turning around and saying you can leave, when there's no window open, it forces your hand to say, yes, of course, we'll accept it. The Ferrell, as there's nothing else you can really do in that time.
It's a disaster. Raw was then, like, that's obviously was the opposite end then, was it, in terms of looking after lads?
Yeah, it was. Look, at the time, I almost made a foolish decision. I met Michael O'Neill and Liam Buckley at the time, who was at Sporting Fingal, and I was choosing between the two of them. And thankfully, I said to my dad, I was saying, which club will I go to? And I was saying, Sporting Fingal, I'd probably have a better chance of playing. And I think they had Europe. And I was going, okay, Rovers, it'll be tough to get in. I know they've Gary Twigg and a lot of good players up there. And I suppose my dad said, look, let's go with Shamrock Rovers, because I suppose they were very close to winning the league, I think, the year before. They won the league that year. And I was going, right, I suppose, how can I make sure I get into a team that will show my talents, I suppose, my ability? And my dad said, look, that looks like the team that will sort of suit you. So I went and signed for Shamrock Rovers, and then about 6 days later, Sporting Fingal went bust, so it was a good decision.
It's crazy that they can, like, try and sign players, like, surely, well, obviously Buckley had no idea that was coming.
I'm glad that, I suppose, well, them days probably aren't too far gone from the league, and I'm sure there might be a couple, maybe a club in a year or two's time that will, I suppose, go bust again, probably, but back then, I suppose it seemed like it was happening every season, or not every two seasons, that there was a club coming and going from the league and then just starting up under a new name. But I suppose Liam himself probably didn't know too much about it. But I say, look, a lot of lads went down the same route as me. I think, I'm not sure, maybe Ken O'Mahon did the same thing, whereas I think he actually went and signed with Sporting Fingal, and then a few days later came Shamrock Rovers. So I was one of the lucky ones, I suppose. Didn't tar my card with Michael O'Neill, that I made the right call.
What did you think of Gary Twigg? Because obviously, geez, when I went to Rovers, I was like, he's a god there, like, isn't he?
Yeah, he was. And I remember I think it was my second session, and I suppose when you're looking at your position, your eyeball, and who you're up against, and looking at their strengths and weaknesses, going, right, will I be getting a game this year? And the first session, I thought, he hasn't done much today. Second session, I remember we were playing five a-sides and someone was crossing a ball in, and I was marking Gary Twigg, and the cross came in and he must have powered above me, about 2 foot above me, and bulleted a header in. And I was going, all right, well, that's why he scores so many goals, because he's obviously such a threat. That I was going, right, Jesus. But in terms of finishing, I struggle to see anyone who finishes like him, because it's easy to say to young lads nowadays, look, let's keep your shots low, don't hit them hard, just caress them into the corner. But in terms of Gary Twigg, he was unbelievable at that. He just caressed the ball into the corner, no power on his shots. That it was as if he just was side-footing them in, but he'd find the corner every time. And I suppose the amount of goals he got over his shorts, what was it, four seasons at Shamrock Rovers, I suppose it was a testament to how good of a finisher he was.
What kind of relationship did you have with Michael O'Neill? Was he that good a manager? Did you see him going on to have such success as he did? Like,
yeah, he was brilliant. He was amazing. That, I suppose,
is he the best you've worked under?
Probably, yeah. He was unbelievable in a sense that, look, very little things that may seem small to people outside of football, but it's something I could have told him. My brother was playing with me at Galway for maybe two or three games, and then he'd be coming up to asking you, oh, how's your brother by name? And it could be a year later down the line, and he still remembers these things that, I suppose, just reminisce. I suppose he wants to reminisce with you and be, I suppose, have that personal touch where a lot of other managers don't even consider that. And I know, let's say someone like, you hear the United boys that's talking about Alex Ferguson, that he'd always do the same. And when Michael O'Neill would do it, it was always just something that, I suppose, even if you're angry going to him and he's going, how's your brother David doing, or how's this and this in life, it's hard to stay angry with someone then, and you're going, okay, he's diffused me very quickly there. And I suppose that was a sign of a good manager.
What was the European run like? What game stands out for you the most in that group stage?
I suppose Partizan, the qualifier was, Partizan away was unbelievable. It was I had just come back. I think I had played one game. I had a heart operation that year, and I was out for 10 weeks, and then I came back and played Galway away. And then I think I came back and was on the bench out in Partizan and came on at half time. And look, I won a Pennell out there, and I remember just being on, we all went out as a team that night, and I didn't touch a drop of alcohol, which is kind of unlike me, but it was unbelievable, just in a sense of that we were on such a high that of the result that I suppose I've never been able to replicate that in life, that it was just such a buzz. It was, I suppose, being, what was I, 19 then, to go out there to a stadium like that, in front of fans like that, to cause such an upset. It was unbelievable to be a part of.
Why didn't you drink?
I think mainly just because I was on such a high, and probably because I was on very little money.
It was such an expensive place, so.
Yeah, it was. And we went out to a club that was like...
But surely you would have just made an unbelievable bonus.
Yeah, but you don't get paid that bonus straight into your account that night. Coming,
it's 2 years, isn't it?
Yeah, so the problem was, look, we were on such a high from the result that, you know, look, there was plenty of lads that were drinking, and some good stories behind it. Like, I remember we were coming home at like maybe 5 or 6 in the morning, and there was lads out playing tennis as it was getting bright, and they were completely gargled, and they were great times. And look, them two players that I'm talking about have gone on to have great careers, so you can leave that up to you to guess who they were.
When you were on about the heart surgery, when did you first find out that you'd need heart surgery? And were you scared for your career then?
Yeah, so I remember it was, who were we playing? I think we were playing maybe Bowes, I think it was maybe the following day, and I was in the team shape day before the game. It was Dundalk we were playing. Playing Dundalk and Tala, and in the team shape the day before, I was just running around, and I used to get heart palpitations as I was a kid and all grown up. And I remember one day just in training, I got a really bad case of it that I had to say to the management, look, I need to sit down here. This isn't right. I'm getting really bad heart palpitations. Then I said, look, I can't play tomorrow. So I went on the bench, and they were saying, don't be on the bench, don't play this and that. I was like, oh, I'm fine. I get it all the time. So went, played the game, came on for maybe 30 minutes, and geez, I was struggling for breath. I was struggling to stand during the game, and it was, I went to a doctor then for a couple of weeks trying to figure out what was wrong with me. I had a Wolf Parkinson's White syndrome, which is basically, I think it's where my heart had an extra pathway in it where something to do with an electrical pulse in it that I need to get burnt out. But it was quite a scary time, but look, I was maybe 19, so I was I was just more so worried about, can I get back with Copenhagen in a couple of weeks? I don't want to miss this. And I remember I was having rows with Alan Byrne saying, put me back in training straight away, and they were saying, no, it's a heart operation, you need to be slowly eased back in. But I suppose looking back now, I met Alan recently and I thanked him, and I apologized for, I suppose, being so brash at the time, saying, what are you doing? Like, with Copenhagen, this is bigger than anything. But obviously, look, he was wise then, that he was just saying, look, in a few years' time, you might see different than you're seeing now. And obviously, he did in the end.
Has it ever affected you in the rest of your career?
No, completely fine. Ever since that, I touch wood, I never really had a heart palpitation since that. Once the extra pathway was burnt away, I was completely fine then.
So you, after a year with Shamrock Rovers, Reading coming, but that wasn't your first option, was it?
To go,
we spoke about this before. Like, it was very close to joining Hibs, because I know myself, I was close to joining it as well. It was just one man never got the job, wasn't it? Irish man got it over another.
Yeah, myself and Conor McCormick were told at the time, look, your retention letters haven't been, I won't say who the manager was, but your retention letters haven't been signed, but I could be going for the Hibs job. I'd like to take his
wife. I said it was Michael O'Neill, because he was in the same position, because I was Stephen Cork. Yeah. I should have left Cork that year, so I'll say it.
Yeah, I went home that day telling my dad, right, Dad, I'm going over to Hibs, this is going to be great. Got over with a manager who, look, knows me, is going to play me, and I was going, this is going to be unbelievable for me, that I'm going to go into a team and I know he'll play me because he knows what I'm about. And I'd gone home packing my bags, getting stuff ready, and then about a week later I seen Pat Flanagan was announced, so I quickly unpacked my bags, and I suppose then Reading came in a few months later, which was, look, it was nice to, I suppose, have a fallback, which was the Championship, which obviously was very nice. But I suppose that's life, and what could have possibly been if Michael O'Neill got that job. Myself and you, Cummins, could have been sitting on the bench at Hibs.
I would have got the stand, I'd say. Wait. That's my position, the stand. I'd be lucky to get the bench. Do you ever think going over to Reading, were you a bit sceptical after your previous experience with Everton?
Yeah, well, I suppose I was and I wasn't. I was thinking, right, this is brilliant. I've learned so much from my previous time that I suppose I know what to do and what not to do. And then I suppose that ultimately harmed me in a sense that last time I was out there, I lived with 10 players. And I said, right, instead of living with 10 lads, I'm going to get my own place and I'm going to live a bit away from the training ground where I'm not totally immersed in it. And I suppose to have my own space like I do at home. And then next thing you know, I stayed in a place called Maidenhead, which is on the map about 45 minutes away from Reading. But if you're stuck in traffic, it's 2 hours. And then anytime anyone on the team was doing anything, I was 2 hours away. And it was a case of, I can't, I have to go home, because if I don't go now, I'm going to get stuck in 2 hours traffic. And I suppose it wasn't the smartest thing for me to do. I probably look at that time like that, you're probably going, right, I need someone who knows more about, I suppose, where to live and where to do this and that to stay, to help you. But I suppose I didn't really have that at the time.
Accrington, that's a bit of a culture shock because I've played there. That's not a good place to play, is it?
No, it wasn't. Look, I went from, I suppose, signing for Reading in the Championship. 6 months later, they go up to the Premier League and I'm going, right, well, for the first 6 months, I was injured. Now I'm fit. Can I possibly... Well,
did you get a pay raise as a thing because they went into the Prem?
No, because I had to make an appearance in the Championship to get that pay rise, which was...
Oh,
6 months towards the end, I was trying everything to get that appearance.
Two-foot lads in training and everything.
I pulled both my quads and I just kept on going out to train and to try and get, like, I suppose, trying to push through and go, right, look, if I can get an appearance, then, geez, I'm set. These lads are going up here. But, look, it wasn't to be. So it was... The next thing, they got taken over by a Russian owner and they're signing lads left, right and centre. And I'm out at Accrington and, yeah, I've gone from training with the Premier League squad to out on Accrington. And I suppose, geez, once I went to Accrington, I suppose even the lads there, if they ever spoke about me, but I was like, I probably hated every minute of it. It's, it's.
Did they have their own training ground then or anything?
No, if you're training on local, what would you call it, AstroTurfs at schools and school pitches and everything like that. And I remember one day we were out for jogs and you're running through pub car parks and everything. And I was just like, get me back home. This is not for me. And I don't want to sound like almost a prima donna that I'm going, oh, I'm too good to be running through school car parks and stuff like that. It's not a case of that, but
it's a case of Rovers were doing better, had better facilities. And you're like, what's the point in being here? I find that.
Exactly. It was a case of, look, while I'm earning nice money, I'm on loan from Reading. I prefer to be at home and training and playing in a standard of football that I suppose it's higher in a sense that it's not as physical. And I suppose I'm able to show my ability better than being up against League Two as a grueling league. And at the time, there wasn't much football played in it. And Accrington were one of the footballing teams, but It didn't suit me whatsoever. So I was running through car parks thinking, get me out of here, get me home. And a few, probably weeks to months later, I was home. And I suppose even when I came back, I was maybe for a couple of weeks to months, I suppose people were going, this guy's probably lost it completely, in a sense of my confidence was on the floor again. And I suppose even just outside of football, I probably wasn't doing everything as much as I should have been, as in living your life right and everything like that. Because I suppose when you take them knocks, you're going, right, you probably don't train as hard as you should. You probably don't eat as well as you should. You don't drink as little as you probably should as well. So I suppose all that sort of catches up on you, even in terms of game time, when you've not played for a year, year and a half to 2 years, you're coming back. And I look at someone like Rory Gaffney now, and he's probably gone through the same process of he's coming home, and I probably expect someone like him to have a bigger season this year, because he obviously came back to Rovers and he probably didn't play as well as he'd have liked, and he got picking up injuries. So I suppose someone like him this year, I'm looking at him going, he'll probably have a better season this year now that he's probably had a bit of time to bed in and get a bit more confidence.
So did you actually feel worse coming back the second time than you did the first time?
It's probably similar, and probably second time's a bit easier because you've already done it. First time coming home, you're thinking, a part of you is thinking, I failed, I've gone over, and everyone had these high hopes for me and high expectations. But then on the other hand, I'm sure you know yourself, you're so happy to be getting out of England, and obviously in your case, Scotland, that you're going, right, I can't wait to get home. I'm delighted to be back here. And for you, it was Cork. For me, it was Dublin, going, right, I'm so happy to be getting home and playing that I don't care if people are queuing what I did as a failure. It's just so good to be back.
Sometimes it is that you just want to stay because you don't want to be seen as a failure, isn't it? Because they don't realise then, like you said, when you're sitting in the house by yourself, how tough it is. Like,
yeah, well, I suppose each person's, I suppose, to their own in that sense. That me, myself, even when, at the start when I was speaking to you, I'm not one to really care what other people think of me too much. Everyone has their own opinion on people, and people could say to me, geez, you're a massive failure, went over to England, and it wouldn't bother me whatsoever, because I know that, look, I've always, I suppose, 90%, 95% of the time, I've done as much as I can with my ability. It's just coming home from a club in England where I wasn't enjoying myself. For me, it was a very simple and straightforward decision of get home. Who cares what other people think? Look, there's money. Yes, you'll get a lot more money in the UK, and you could come away at the end of your career with more money. But I suppose for me, it's not about money. It's about how happy are you in life? And I suppose how happy are you, you can stay in England and probably bounce from club to club and possibly never win anything or do anything along them lines. So for me, it's, what have you won? What have you, I suppose, how much have you enjoyed it, and your memories you can take out of football? And money's
obviously money's, to be fair, you wouldn't play for free, would you? Why did you decide to leave Rovers then for Cork City?
Remember at the time, the first 2 years, first year and a half, Trevor Crawley was there, and I remember at the time, Trevor had myself, Eamon Zaid, Kieran Kilduff and Mark Quigley, and I suppose none of us were really scoring, and it didn't really suit any of our games. I suppose, I know he wanted Christy Fagan in at the time, and he was looking for a striker like that, and I suppose that didn't really suit any of us. So Pat Fenlon came in then after, and I got on really, really well with Pat, and I liked his training and everything, and I went to speak with Pat towards the end of the season, and I remember I almost felt like a part of the furniture there at Shamrock Rovers. That was something I said when I'd left that. It was a big decision why I'd left that. I felt like I needed a new challenge, and that I was almost in my comfort zone, in a sense that I probably could have sat at Shamrock Rovers for another 2 years with them and sat there for a while, and felt like I could have probably been a bit part player. But I was looking at Cork, and when I met John, you know yourself, coming to what John is like, he's so
unbelievable, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very enthusiastic and driven and determined. And I suppose once you get talking to someone like that, you're like, geez, this is the type of man I want to play for. So when I met John, look, I was like, right, get me down to Cork. I want to go down. I want to play for this man. So it was a decision that I look back and I'm going, thank God I done that.
How were you kind of treated when you walked into the dressing room in Cork?
Yeah,
I just think Cork people see Dublin people as arrogant.
Yeah, look, I suppose coming from Dublin, I didn't really realise that Cork people felt that way. So it's nice to know what you really thought of us. But
I know, geez. I actually remember you were, there was a 23 game. Remember that, in the 23 league? And I remember you walking into the hotel and you were injured at the time. And I was like, this big time Charlie, and you went in, got yourself, and just straight out, and like, there we were going to Estonia later, and I was like, I was delighted, because I was like, yes, that's another strike gone, and I'd actually get on the bench here or something.
Yeah, no, I remember that trip, and yeah, I remember, I think we were coming up to a very important stage of the season with Shamrock Rovers that time, and I think I actually pulled out with a blister on it. No, it was a fairly bad blister, but I pulled out with an infected blister from that squad, and I was so thankful, because that squad at the time, it was, I suppose half the team didn't want to be on it because it wasn't being run right. And I'm sure you know yourself, Cummins, that you were like, geez, I suppose things going on here isn't, I suppose it's not as professional as, let's say, if you were called up to a 19 squad or a 21 squad, it was a bit more of a, I suppose, a, I don't want to say a joke, because it, look, it's very nice to be called up to any squad, but it wasn't as professional as it should have been. And I also remember thinking, right, I want to get into the Shamrock Rovers team. It's, I suppose it's more important for me to get in here than it is for the 23s.
Yeah.
But, even touching on the Cork one, that, so when I went into the dressing room, it was nice that I knew Dan Murray and Billy Dennehy and Darren Dennehy. And then you've gone into a dressing room that has lads like Liam Kearney and John O'Flynn, and you're going, and Colin Healy, and all these lads that are, I suppose, brilliant people. And Alan Bennett, Liam Miller all came in that season. And I suppose it was just a very, very good dressing room to come into.
How good were some of the players there? Who's the one that stood out for you when you mentioned them names, considering the careers of that?
Look, I suppose it's, for me, there's three straight away. You're looking at, you're going, obviously, look, Liam Miller, unbelievable in terms of his past and how calm he was in training and on the ball. He was just, it was as if he floated around the pitch, and he was just so, I suppose, elegant in how he played. He was a beautiful footballer in every sense, that nothing fazed him when he was playing. And then obviously you have Colin Healy, who's obviously almost a completely opposite, where he's so intense, and I've never seen anyone train as well as Colin. And Colin Healy, I think maybe 2 years ago, John asked him to come in 2 years later when he was retired, and he's probably the best trainer, because I've never seen anyone have, I suppose, fire a pass in as well as he could and demand standards. And doesn't surprise me that he's gone on to be a manager now, because he always demanded so much from everyone in training. And then you have someone like Alan Bennett as well, that, you know yourself, Cummins, what it's like to be in training with Benno, that he used to wear this Casio watch, and I've had so many imprints of that Casio watch in my head from absolutely wrestling with you for every ball in training. That he was, look, he was not only a gentleman, but he was such a good player for, I look at him, he was playing until maybe 36, 37. That, look, I'm sure you know yourself, that to be playing at that age, it's remarkable.
Mm. And you win the cup in the first year, last minute. What kind of feeling is that?
I suppose we've done it a very nice way. We've done it, obviously, for winning the cup at the last minute, and then to do the following year as well on Penos. It was, just unbelievable. I remember, I think I came off cramp in my first cup final, and I actually was beside the pitch, and I was saying to John Caulfield, John, jeez, I'm in bits here. My boat legs are gone. They've seized up on me. And he was like, right. Wait there. Dan Murray's not ready. So I got stretchered off with cramp in a cup final. I got some dragon for that. And then we lost that year as well. And I had two good friends at Dundalk, Kilduff and Fergal Kerrin, where I was the physio. And the slagging I got off them for not only losing, but then got stretchered off with cramp. So the following year, to be able to turn around and go, look, it was nice to not come off with cramp, and two, to be able to beat you, was, I suppose, it's nice to be giving them some slagging back.
How good is Shawnee McGuire?
He's ridiculous. Like, he's someone that, if
was
I'm...
Is he the reason he won the league that year?
Honestly. It's hard to say, because...
It's, look, not really, like, is it? I mean, like, when he left, let's be honest, like...
No, well, like, I suppose the side to it that people don't really see is they could turn around and say, Sean McGuire won you the league and won you this and that. But when we had Marco Sullivan, we were very close. And then we signed, I suppose, Stephen Dooley that year was unbelievable. And I had a very good year myself, and so did Garrod Morrissey. And you signed Conor McCormick and Greg Bulger is on the bench. This is the side to it that people don't bring up. And then you lose Kev O'Connor as well, who at that time was frighteningly good for a left back. He was, I suppose, he just drove the team on from there. And not only that, you're then having to replace the way you play. We were getting into Shawnee and everyone make runs off of him. Whereas then I was up front, Jimmy Cohan was up front, and it's just going right. Even when you came in, Cummins, it was, okay, now we have a target, man. Now we can, Cummins can flick it on and we'll run off him. Where it's, I suppose, we didn't have Shawnee there to, I suppose, play balls into his feet. Me with my back to goal, I'm poor with my back to goal. I'm a winger, really. I like to say that I was a striker for a few years, but in terms of how good Shawnee was, he was unbelievable. There was, look, don't get me wrong, there was games where I was looking at him going, geez, this guy's just gone to another level now. He was, when he first came in, he was in and out of the team for a little spell. And I remember I replaced him in a game up in Galway where I started in front of him. And since that, he didn't look back. He was unbelievable since then. And the ball would come into him, he'd be able to do it all. He'd be spinning behind, he'd be out leaping big defenders, he'd be taking it in, holding it off, laying it off, then getting in the box. He had it all. And for, I suppose, a 12 to 15 month spell, he was just unplayable.
Did you ever get a chance to go back over to the UK?
No.
You were saying you were doing well, no offers.
Yeah, no, look, no offers. And I suppose I'll be completely honest, Cummins, if an offer had came in, I wouldn't have gone. And it was something that I suppose I had been playing my best football and I was maybe 26. And from right wing, I think I maybe had something like maybe 12 goals the first season, maybe 10 the next, and something along the lines of 12 to 15 the following season with a handful of assists. And I was going, right, I'm playing the best football of my career here. But if an offer comes in, I won't be going anywhere because I've been twice. I've hated every minute. So I'd even say to lads, if they asked, like, would you go back over? I remember saying at the time, even if it was a 3-4 grand a week, I wouldn't go because I know what it's like. I suppose the money doesn't outweigh the, I suppose, the mental aspect of going over and hating every minute of it.
Before, when you win the league with Cork, how much of a relief was it, and what were the celebrations like afterwards? Because you did stumble over the line, like.
Yeah, it was a relief, and I'll be honest, it was a bit tainted for me at the time. It was something at the time. There was the rumours that I had signed with Dundalk. Yes, but at that time they couldn't be proved, so they were just rumours. So it was. I remember we played. Look, to get over the line against Derry, it was huge because, look, as a club we were stumbling, and there was the fear that, geez, we might not do this. And after putting it in for so long and for chasing the dog down and getting that big gap, and then to see it slowly starting to dwindle away, that we're going, oh, Jesus, if we throw this away, we'll be the biggest bottlers possibly ever in the League of Ireland. So,
because there was panic, like, because I remember the lads telling me about, John, you were still about 21 points clear or something. You lost to Shamrock Rovers and you were in, was it the next morning, analysing the video, like, as if you'd lost the league or something. You were miles ahead.
Yeah, we'd lost, I think it was 3-0 we lost. And possibly looking back, it could have been the right thing to do. Each manager is to their own. And so the big thing for us that year was we weren't used to losing whatsoever. So when we lost the game, it was a crisis. And we'd all be going imploding on the inside. And I suppose if you're used to winning more so, I suppose winning leagues, you may know that, look, there will come a blip. There will come a time where we might not win a game. And I suppose it's about keeping calm. But at that time, we were all sort of going crazy and fighting with each other on how we can get over the line. And look, we obviously did in the end. And it was, as you said, a huge relief. But for me, it was, I suppose, quite tainted. I remember a couple of the Cork fans were booing me in the home game. I suppose when we were playing Gal, I think it was, might have been Galway or Bray, the last game of the season before we were lifting the trophy. And I didn't want to go up and lift it or anything like that. So I think the Ophelia Storm was there. So I lifted it over where the empty stand was, really, because I didn't want anyone booing me or anything like that. So I was like, right, at least I'll get my hands on it lifted and now I'll stay towards the back. So it was a bit...
there actual like resentment to some of the Cork fans over that?
Do I?
No, just at that moment, were you feeling like, why should I celebrate with these fellas? Like,
it wasn't more so for why should I celebrate with these fellas. I was like, look, I suppose it's a big moment for everyone that, look, once I got in the dressing room, I was celebrating with all my teammates. I was more so a case of, it's a big moment for the team that you have lads who I knew for, geez, how long was I at Cork then at that stage? Maybe 2.5 years. And same with John. John was there for 3.5 years, possibly at that stage, that were hunting down Dundalk like dogs. And they literally tried everything to get over the line. And when we did, I didn't want it to be a case of, here's me going up and celebrating. And then it's a headline of Cork fans booing as they lift the title type thing. So I was like, right, I'll do it over here. I'll get my pictures. And then once I get in the dressing room, I'll have a few drink champagne and celebrate with the lads then. And I suppose ultimately would it have been nice to maybe celebrate outside? Yes, but did I care really too much? Not really.
So going into that cup final, it kind of broke that you'd signed and everything when Stephen Kenny said it. Was that the moment then you went, I'm not going? Or was it the fact that, were you going into that cup final still convinced you were going to be a Dundalk player?
No, at that stage, going into the final, I had known that, look, this isn't right. We had met up and, look, it was in the paper from, I think the game was on maybe the, now my day's maybe a day or two off here, but the game's obviously on the Sunday and I think it maybe broke on the Tuesday. And we met up as a squad on the Thursday or Friday as a team, and John sat everyone down and said, look, I want to address the elephant in the room. And then Mark McNulty stands up and goes, John, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have sung that chant. John said, sit down, you fool, it's not about you. So then he said, look, Carl Shepherd's he's leaving us. It's people are asking me not to play him, but there's no way. He said, I know Shep, he's going to put in everything into this game. And I suppose to hear John talking like that, I suppose I was like, look, the other manager has sort of thrown me under the bus here and gave me possibly his word that, look, this won't happen. And then it came out. Look, he may not have directly said it, but for me, it was enough that I was like, look, this is not right, that I can't go and sign with Dundalk now. And I have a man here and John who's single-handedly standing up for me in front of his team when it could have been easy to go, no, look, you signed for them, you're not playing in this game. So, yeah, look, it was a very stressful time, and I was only a side of it that people don't see, that before that game, I had gone and in my head gone, look, I'm sticking with Cork. If people saw my celebration when I played the ball through the H and he scored, I literally ran 60 yards full sprint, then 2 seconds later went down with cramp because I'd sprinted for so long to get to him. I was just so happy. And then I obviously scored a penalty as well in the shootout, which I suppose was, I'd never been more confident in a penalty that I was actually going to consider, and I have a brutal record on them. I was never so confident of scoring. I was just like, right, 100% scoring this penalty. I'm just, for some reason, it was the most confident I've ever been, and one that I suppose it was very nice for me to be able to repay John for saying that in front of the lads, that look, Shep's going to give us his all and I trust him.
How did you get out of the contract then? Yeah. What were the steps? Did you ring Stephen Kenny and say,
Yeah, I had to ring them. And look, I suppose there's steps in each pre-contract that I suppose a lot of clubs may not know things about. Like if you are signing a pre-contract with a club, the other club has to inform the other club within 6 months or within a couple of months of you doing that. And obviously that procedure wasn't followed. And I suppose a pre-contract isn't really worth the paper. Isn't really worth the paper that it's signed on. I was more than happy to go and sign with Dundalk until it all happened. So for me, it was just, once I was able to, obviously, look, I got out of it and I signed back with Cork, and that's that.
Did you regret it afterwards when Dundalk opened the next year?
No, not at all. Honestly, not at all. If people might have asked me, geez, what would have happened if you went to Dundalk? And
you would have owned more money, you would have been living at home. I wouldn't have blamed her for going.
Yeah, but look, as I said to you before, even with the thing with, if England came back up, I wouldn't have gone for the money. It's just, I suppose, look, I had a great time at Cork, and for me, I couldn't justify it in myself going down to Dundalk after, I suppose, what the events that unfolded coming up to the cup final. It was, right, I have to stay with Cork, and in no way do I regret it, because I know all the emotions I had going into that cup final.
Yeah, but like, at Cork at some times, did it frustrate you? Were you, you know, training, how we used to go in 2.5 hours beforehand? How frustrating could that be some days? Like,
yeah, look, it's aside to football, like, the
way, like, I'll just give one time. Do you remember when we had to go down to a pitch and rip up a piece of paper and come back into the dressing room? Like, that was insane. At training, when it was Damon Delaney's first day, and we were all thinking, what is he thinking here?
Yeah, look, there's sides to football that is full of crap. Like, there's so much of it that is full of crap that I don't buy into whatsoever. I know that a lot of teams, let's say beforehand, just might meet up and write out, like, what can we do, or what type of team are we going to be? And you write it on a page and you put the page up in a dressing room. But some people might like that. So I understand that a team might do that. But for me, it's a lot of crap, because you can write, we want to be a hardworking team. But if you're a team full of lazy so-and-sos, it doesn't matter what you write on a page, because it's about how you, I suppose, you do your day-to-day jobs. Like, how you, let's say John Caulfield, his teams are known for being hard work, because in every training session, if you're not training, he will roar the head off you until you get running. And if you don't, you won't be there for long. So, yeah, there's a lot of it. A lot of the football is boring, is, let's say, pre-matches, waiting around, all that stuff I'm certainly not going to miss, because you have your pre-match, you're waiting around hours before training, you're waiting around hours, and the traveling as well. Look, there's a lot of it I won't miss, but in terms of the stuff that you said there, geez, I'm only so happy that I don't have to do that side of it again.
When you, like, you got me captain then, but I always remember you took it off Conor McCormick at the time. You were the one who had to tell him that you were taking it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. We were sharing an apartment as well at the same time, so it was an awkward conversation. But it was a funny one. Like, I was called in and I sort of made captain without being made captain. I was captain when Benno wasn't there, so it was one of them where I suppose I delivered the bad news and got none of the, I suppose, the rewards for it. So it was a funny one. But look, it was a big moment for, obviously, for any player. I suppose, you know what I'm like, Cummins, I don't really buy into the emotional side of, let's say, being a captain or anything like that. I suppose for me, it was just a sign that, okay, you're doing something right, keep on doing the same sort of things. But is it nice to be a made captain? Yes. But is it something that I think back of and go, geez, that was such an honour? No, because for me, when I first met John, he was saying, we have Johnny Levy, who's captain now, but you look around the dressing room, I could have made Dan Murray this, this, and this captain, because these are all captains. So for me, it's nice to have some, the captain's armband, but ultimately, I suppose players don't really care who's captain as long as that person's actually doing the business, or at least doing the right steps and training, et cetera, that he's leading by example.
What was your feeling when John lost his job?
I'll be honest, I was like completely gutted for him, in a sense that I knew that this was a man, as I told you the story about the cup final beforehand and all the memories that I had with him, I was gutted for him, because I knew, like, John's can be hard work at times, and John won't mind, well, not hard work, he's demands so much that I suppose you're going, this is so demanding that, look, you miss out on that. He'll give out to you if you're, let's say, going out the day before a game to a shopping centre or anything like that, that a lot of other managers won't do, but that's just John, and he demands so much, and I don't want to say it took a toll on that squad, but John probably himself, looking back, will say that it was, I suppose we didn't have the quality in the dressing room that time, and he was trying to demand so much from us, but the quality just wasn't there. And even for when he lost his job, I was good at it. And I remember everyone was so, I suppose, riled up at the time, and tensions were flying, and it's easy to, I suppose, what would you say, easy to dismiss the past and just think about, oh, this guy's wrecking my head because he's demanding so much now. But I remember the following day he came in to thank us all, and I was like, even now I'll happily text John anytime and say, how are you getting on, John? Because when he came in, I was like, this man's just, I suppose, deep down, he's a really nice guy, and he's done everything for
me. I think even himself, he kind of knew at the time, you know what, it's right for me to go here. I think he just kind of, it actually took his toll on him, kind of, I think, the job.
Yeah. No, I probably agree with you there, because, look, he was so used to winning that when it started to go wrong, that, I suppose, the pressure that he put on lads to perform when we weren't performing, it just became, I suppose, an endless cycle of demanding, not performing. And then when you start to try and change tack, I suppose it was as good as up that if John's not demanding from us, and let's say if he was going, right, I'll go with a nice approach, then it wouldn't have worked because he was all about demanding. So it was, it probably took its toll on John as well. He was probably thankful for the break when he stepped away. And now he's obviously at Galway now, and I'm sure they'll probably, knowing John, he'll probably get them promoted this year. So he's one that I obviously look back on and have a lot of great memories. And even the little things, we played Dundalk in, I think it was the 2015 Cup Final. He lost that Cup Final in extra time to a last-minute Richie Tell winner. He went in and congratulated all the Dundalk players into their dressing room after and gave them a speech. And these are little things that people forget quickly that I've not seen another manager do to us after a Cup Final. So it's I suppose it's a mark of the man.
Do you think that season was kind of Cork playing First Division next year? Do you think that was the downfall club just going the wrong way?
Look, it's hard to, I suppose, pinpoint where the club went wrong. They went from, I suppose they were trying to do things the right way, which is, I suppose, the worst thing about it. They went from 42 weeks to 44 to 46 weeks pay to 52 weeks pay. And look, while it's a big jump, every player will guarantee you that if they could get 52 weeks paid, they'll do this, and this for you, and you'd hope that it will sort of pay off on the pitch. But I suppose it wasn't to be when you look over the list of players that left. I suppose, geez, you're probably talking maybe 10 to 15 players that were, if not first team, they were very close to being regular first team players, and maybe 3, 4, 5 who are complete star players that you lose. And I suppose the quality just that was brought in, it was, some of them were gambling on loan players, this. And you look back at it just quality wasn't in the squad.
Right. I've got to ask you a few questions now. So Cots takes over. You went in and asked Cots, could you get your teeth done in Turkey when we got a game called off? Yeah. How cheeky is that? How do you have the front to go and ask a manager that? When we had the following week off before the week off as well, the break.
Yeah, well, I think we had a week off, and the following week we had off as well. But with my teeth where they were veneers, so I had to go to Turkey to get them done, and I had a problem with them, so I was going like, geez, I need to get this fixed, like, and there's no better time than now. So look, I went in, I asked, I don't know if I got it, I don't think I did I?
You did get it, you did, it's just Turkey cancelled on you, because I remember going, are you joking me, like, because I was on my way getting kicked out of the club, and you were getting your bloody teeth done.
It would have been maybe, what, 2-3 days, so look, lads go, these type of things happen within a club, like, John would have let Sads go home, and this lad would go back to Dublin, and there's loads of times where lads would have been, I suppose, let go back to Dublin. I suppose the difference was, I was going to Turkey to get my teeth done.
I can remember Dan Casey coming in after Paddy's Day in a good tradition.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, one of the lads, Josh, said to me on Twitter, talk to me about you saying that you could beat Katie Taylor in a boxing match.
It wasn't a boxing match. Now, what this was this started out as Katie Taylor when she was maybe about 5-6 years ago, and it was a case of me putting everything I could in my way to say, right, if I got 6 months like MMA grappling training, and we did MMA, and I did this, and she wasn't allowed to train MMA, I'd beat Katie Taylor. But I suppose looking back now, she has been on good form recently, so I'd say she just beat me. My big thing around it was saying I'd have maybe 20-30 kg on her. Maybe now I'd have about 40-50. But looking back now, I suppose she'd probably beat me on points.
And what's the story of Mick Rings, the kit man at Cork, said you were first man for robbing coats and things?
Not robbing coats. There's one coat that myself and Stephen Beattie would have had our eye on, and I think it's found a good home. I'm not going to put my foot in my mouth here, but it's found a good home.
Looking forward to the season ahead, who do you think is the club that's who are you tipping to win the league, and who's the player you think is going to be the stand-up player? I know that Jack Bowen's gone, I suppose.
It's a difficult one. A club that people probably wouldn't expect me to pick to win the league. I think Bowes might win it this year. I'm looking at their team and...
You're just trying to brown nose the Bowes fans now because they hate you.
They know that's the last thing I'm going to do for them. if there's ever a crowd that did not like me very much, and I didn't, I suppose that was reciprocated back to them, but I'm looking at their team and they signed Thomas Alua, they've Andy Lyons, they've signed Harry, they've a load of young good players, Ross Tierney, when you look at it, they've a frightening team. And I just think, I know firsthand that when you lose, let's say, someone like a Jack Byrne from your team, when we lost Shawnee, it was so hard to, I suppose, change how you're playing. And I could be wrong. Shamrock Rovers could obviously run away with it again. And Dundalk signed a lot of players that I wouldn't be too familiar on. So I suppose I couldn't put my hat on them and say they'll win the league. But when you look at what Bowes have been building, and they've added little bits here and there to their team, that if they can hold on to Andy Lyons for the season, that'll be a huge one. He's so good going forward. And I suppose he's a huge outlet for them, that if they can hold on to him, I'd say they'll be there or thereabouts. But
who do you think will win the first division?
Jeez. Now, it's probably a good thing for the League of Ireland that I'm saying this, that it's the most competitive first division that I've seen in a long time. Jeez, it's very tough to call, but it would be hard to look between Shells and Galway. I'd probably just pip Galway just because they have manager. A lot of experience in that team and the manager. Like, John's going to have them, I suppose, the way they finished last year and the signings they made in the off-season. I really like Ronan Manning as a player as well. He's a he floats past players at times that, I suppose, if he had his head screwed on, if he buys into, I suppose, John's style of play, he could be one that you'd really watch out for. He could be sort of like Sads was for John, that needs to buy into working hard. And once he does, I suppose he'll reap the rewards for it.
It came up this week, Ireland are looking for a joint bid of the World Cup in 2030. Do you think that's a good thing for Irish football?
No, I think, look, I'd be very disappointed if the FAI were actually, or the government were in any way looking into this. They talk about getting your house in order first. You look at the stadiums around, sure, we've only the Aviva, really. You look at stadiums around Ireland, there's Tala is getting done up, and when it does, it'll be great that there's that. Bar that, the vast majority of stadiums are outdated. There's so the toilet, the facility for toilets and fans are laughable in some stadiums. You'd hope that a lot of that time and effort and money would be put into actually, let's get the League of Ireland built up right. Let's get, I suppose, the commercial aspect of the League of Ireland built up, that players are looked up to as rugby players are in Ireland. Like, you look at it and you're saying, Jesus, there's, I suppose, no profile to League of Ireland players in comparison to rugby, in comparison to Gaelic. You don't see League of Ireland players on billboards around Dublin or even on TV. The match of the day sort of program, which was Soccer Republic, is now completely scrapped. So you'd hope that, I suppose, these aspects would be looked into and saying, okay, if we get our house in order first and get good stadiums, better profile around the League of Ireland, to try and attract more fans to what people call the best fans in the world that don't attend our league. I suppose there are aspects of it that, I suppose, you'd hope that they'd look into first, going, right, let's get our house in order.
Yeah, but for me, would it not sell Irish game? Is it not more important to be recognised internationally?
Well, if you look at it, Cummins, look at this, I suppose, the League of Ireland.
But, like you're saying there, what's the point in doing up stadiums in the league if you're not going to have fans in the ground?
Well, let's say, for example, if I brought you to, you'd never watched the League of Ireland game before, and I bring you along as a a spectator? Are you going to come back if we go to a ground where you can't go to the toilet and the stand you're sitting in is getting drenched and the seat you're sitting on is half broke? You're not going to dream of coming back because I suppose the facilities are not right in the vast majority of stadiums. And look, I'll be a League of Ireland man now till the day I die, and I'll always be, I suppose, demanding the most for the players that are there and demanding, I suppose, standards that have been accepted in the League of Ireland.
Might get a job with the PFA,
Well, look, for me, the standards that have been accepted in the League of Ireland are so low in terms of facilities, in terms of training grounds, everything like that, that you look at it and you're going, if, let's say, if Ireland was to host, where would these teams train? They couldn't train in, let's say, the vast majority of are Shamrock Rovers and a handful of others, the only that actually have their own training grounds. So there's so many sides of it that need, I suppose, to up their game in. And I suppose that's not going to happen without one, government funding. And I suppose commercially, you have to make these players, for me, you have to make the players almost icons or stars that kids are looking up to, going, geez, I want to grow up to be a Graham Burke. I want to grow up and be a Jack Byrne or a Danny Mandrew or Andy Lyons, for example. These are lads that they should be looking up to, and the league should be going, right, look at James McLean, look at all these lads, Seamus Coleman, that have come through the League of Ireland. If we promote these now, I suppose it'll, when they go on to be bigger, better things, possibly for the first team in, with Ireland, you'll be going, okay, well, I've always looked up to this lad since he was a League of Ireland player. Geez, I really want to keep going to League of Ireland matches in case I see this lad now, John Doe here, who's a young under 17 player. I want to see him grow up and then be another international. So there's so much of it that, for me, it's laughable, the standards that we I suppose that are accepted. And I'm not talking about the football side, but I'm talking about off the field.
That was brilliant, Chef. Thanks for your time.
No worries at all.
Enjoy your retirement.
I am.
Get on that belly, mate. Get that belly off.
Yeah, it's well on its way.